I love that movie. I do. I love that movie. And the thing that I see in that movie is guys that are willing to take a risk for a relationship. That's what I see. I mean, those kids were at a time when the relationships they were forming were absolutely frowned upon and violently opposed in some respect. And they were willing to go beyond that to take a risk. And these are defining moments for them that, you know, now several years we look back and say, man, that was an incredible story. And we're in this series, Everyday Friends, and we've been talking about what does it look like to have a friendship that goes beneath the casual drinking buddy dynamic. And really you can get to places of depth and places of growth in a friendship. And so the first week we said, hey, if that's going to happen, we've got to be vulnerable. And we talked about that. And then we said, you know, one of the things that helps is when we learn to encourage our friends. And last week, Brian talked about sacrifice, which is a key part of friendship. And today, kind of final week, leading into the strong challenge, which starts next week, I want to talk about a through line that I see in those choices, the choice of vulnerability, the choice to risk encouraging someone, and the choice to sacrifice for them. So let's just pray before we go any further. God, I just thank you for this opportunity, God, and for this community. I thank you for a place where I get pushed and challenged around things like friendship and what that looks like from your perspective. And so, God, I just pray that today moves us to a new place of being willing to risk what it takes to have the kind of friends that you're calling us to have in our lives and to be to the people in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. So the through line I see in everything we've talked about in this series is that friends, everyday friends, take risks in defining moments. Every friendship has defining moments, moments that make or break the relationship, moments that can take you to a new place with a friend, or moments that will destroy even what you've established. And what I see over and over again is great friends take risks in those moments, and because of the risks they take, it moves them to a new place. And we even see this in the life of Jesus, who, even though he was the Son of God, comes to earth and didn't do life alone, but actually had friends, did life with other people, put himself in a position where he needed other people to grow. And we see that throughout the Bible. There's a team of 72 people that's called out at one point in Jesus' ministry, a team of 72 that he had built. And these are folks who he sent away to do incredible things in his name, to do things like heal people and care for people and talk about this beautiful thing called the kingdom. We see this big team of 72, but then we see Jesus in kind of a smaller team context of 12 disciples, 12 men that he more intentionally spent time with, more intentionally taught, more intentionally trained to replicate the things that he was doing in the earth. But even within that 12, Jesus had some everyday friends. And particularly three men are everyday friends of Jesus. And because of their friendship, there are things we know about Jesus. There are things we see, windows into his life that are recorded in the biographies of his life called the Gospels, that we only have today because these everyday friends saw Jesus at a deeper level. There was a level of depth that they went to with him that no one else shared. And we see Jesus really modeling how to take risks to form this kind of friendship as he engages with these three men. Matthew 4 is one of the first places we see his engagement with them. And it says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. At once, they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Now, has anybody ever seen a movie about Jesus' life on TV or anything, a movie of his life? You know, this is one of the classic scenes that shows up in that movie, you know, kind of Jesus building his team. But a lot of times, the way movies show this is actually pretty weird. It's kind of disturbing to me. I actually gave it a name. I call it Zombie Jesus. This is the Zombie Jesus scene for me. Because in some of these movies, like, these guys are fishing, they're doing their boat thing, and then all of a sudden in the distance, you know, the music starts, and you just see kind of like this disembodied figure of Jesus just walking like this. And he's kind of, you know, he's kind of floating, and he looks like he doesn't know where he's going, and you're wondering, does he have any feet? Like, what's going on with this guy? And all of a sudden, he comes down to the water, and he usually doesn't even say anything to them. He kind of just looks. And then he points. And then all of a sudden, these normal guys doing normal things become like zombie people, and they're following Jesus. They're like, oh, where are we going? You know, and it's crazy because that's not how this happened. That's not how this happened. We know a little bit about, from history, how these kinds of relationships where a rabbi, Jesus was a teacher called a rabbi, where he would invite people into relationship. And chances are, Jesus had interacted with these guys on some level before. On some level, he had had relationship with them. But make no mistake about it, this is a defining moment because what Jesus is doing here is he's risking initiating. And this is one of the risks that everyday friends take, is they risk initiating. There's a defining moment here where Jesus says to these guys that he knew at some level, maybe surface level, hey, I need you for this mission I'm doing. Would you come and would you follow me? Jesus risks that initiation, and these guys risk. They drop their nets. They were in the fishing business. That is who they were. That is their livelihood, and they're willing to give up their livelihood and initiate a different level of friendship with Jesus that would require them to go away from their livelihood and trust that Jesus was going to help figure out what that looked like in their lives. And so there's absolutely a need, if you're going to have a great everyday friend, to risk initiating. I learned about this when I moved to Cincinnati from Philadelphia. In Philly, have a lot of family there, and so a lot of my relationships really were my cousins and extended family, and even people who weren't in my family. You know, you grew up in the same neighborhood. I lived in the same house all those years, and so you kind of just have a network of friends, and so very rarely was I in a situation where I really had to intentionally initiate a new friendship. They kind of emerged, and you know, they kind of grew over time. But when I moved to Cincinnati, that all changed. I mean, when I moved here, I knew some people from a work context, but I really didn't know a lot of people well, and I didn't have any close guy friends in particular, and I knew that was an important deal in my life. And so, you know, I went into this season of friendship in my life that I now affectionately refer to as man dating. Yeah, man dating. I don't know if you've ever been on a man date before or not, but I had several of these. And the reason I call it that is because when I was initiating friendships with guys, it really wasn't very different in the early phases than when I was trying to initiate a dating relationship with a woman. It was weird, the similarity. So, you know, one example for me, I was flying back home, and I'm getting in a shuttle to go to the airport at a parking lot in northern Kentucky, and a guy, I didn't know him at the time, but a guy gets on, and we just quickly exchange, hey, I'm Chuck, oh, my name is Rob, and kind of, you know, that 5 minutes or so of the trip, we got to a point where we said, hey, man, let's get together. I'm new in town, and, you know, let's get together. And so we exchanged information. And, you know, from that point, it really was not very different than when I would get a girl's number. I mean, you know, I'm looking at the card, and the first thing I'm saying is, well, man, I can't call him tomorrow because he'll think I'm desperate. I can't do that. You know. All right, so I got to wait a couple days, you know. You know, so I'm not like this loser guy. So, you know, a couple days later, I start dialing. You know, you pick up the phone, you dial 9 numbers, you hang up. Dial 9 numbers, hang up, you know. Finally, pick up the phone. Hey, Rob, yeah, this is Chuck. We met at the airport on the show. Yeah. Yeah, I was the guy that talked about how great you looked in your glasses. That was me. I actually didn't say that to him, but you feel like you're exposed, so, you know. And, you know, it's like, hey, let's hang out. And so we wound up going to Clifton and hanging out in Clifton at a restaurant, had a great dinner, found out just a ton of similarities, a lot of commonalities in our story, our journey, just really cool interaction. And, you know, great night. And then at the end of the night, you know, his car is here, my car is here, and you're kind of doing the, you know, kicking the dirt. Had a good time tonight. Yeah, I did. Hey, Rob, you think we can go out again? I mean, it's like, that's what it feels like. And the thing is, today, Rob, I mean, he's like a brother to me. He really is. I mean, one of my best friends in the city, and our friend and our families are connected. But that doesn't happen if we don't initiate. It's a risk. It's a risk. And I know it's easy to stay at arm's length in friendships for a long time because there's no risk there. There's nothing on the line. There's no sense of rejection or what if this doesn't work out. There's no sense of investment. And the thing that I love is that Jesus models what it looks like to need people and to actually need to risk initiating to get to the level of friendship that really can help us grow. And everyday friends do that. They risk initiating in a friendship. And because Jesus took that risk, there are times in his life and periods and windows in his life where these guys were his core community, and he was able to have a level of engagement with them that he didn't have with anyone else. One of the times that this happens is 24 hours or so before Jesus is going to die. And he knew at this point in his life that he was heading toward a torturous death, a death that just even today, there's nothing that has been invented that would be more torturous than a crucifixion. And Jesus knew he was heading toward crucifixion. He knew that his life was short in terms of this season of it, and he was going in that direction. And there are things we see about how he was processing that moment that we only know today because these closer inner friends, this Peter, James, and John, this inner circle, was there. This is what it says in the book of Mark. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, to the 12, sit here while I pray. But look what he does with his inner circle. He took Peter, James, and John along with him. They went a little bit further, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. And Jesus said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch. This is the most raw emotionally we see Jesus. Just everything bared open. And what he's doing here is what everyday friends do when they want to go to a level of depth and growth, is Jesus is risking honesty. He's risking honesty. These guys know who he is at this point. They know the incredible call on his life. And yet he's honest enough with his inner circle to say, I'm troubled. I know what's coming. I know that this is what I need to do, but I'm troubled and I need you guys to just sit here and be with me. Man, that is an incredible risk in a friendship, incredible risk of honesty. But Jesus takes that risk. He takes that risk. And we need to take that risk in friendship. If we're going to have everyday friends, we've got to risk honesty. I call this sharing your scars with a friend, sharing your scars. And it's funny because think about when you were a kid. I don't know, maybe I was the only one that was like this, but it certainly has been passed on because my son is like this too. Kids love to share their scars with you, don't they? They can't wait. Look, Daddy, look at the boo-boo I got. I mean, like, we loved sharing our scars with our friends when we were kids, but something happens as we get older. We get a little more sophisticated. Our wounds are a little bit more intricate. They run more deep. And because of that, we get to this place where we learn how to hide our scars really, really well. And we aren't honest. Sometimes we're not honest with anyone, but certainly not close friends about the things that really do make us who we are. And I'm just saying, you got to have some friend in your life where you're willing to risk honesty if you're going to grow to a level that God wants you to grow in. Someone where you can risk saying things like, man, can I just tell you some things that really scare me to death? Can I tell you some fears that are recurring in my life, some things I worry about, and I can't seem to get over these? You know, someone who you can say, hey, there's some stuff that's a part of my past. And I don't share this with a lot of people, but man, if we're going to be intentional in this friendship, you need to know a little bit more about my history. There's got to be some friend that you risk that level of honesty with. And it's not even just the bad things that you're risking when you're getting honest with the friend. You know, sometimes it's sharing with them that crazy business idea that you've not shared with anybody else. It's sharing that vision you have for your life, for your family, that you're not sharing with anybody else. It's sharing this value that means a lot to you, and you really, it's a hill you die on, and maybe a lot of people don't die on it, but there's gotta be some friend in your life where you can be that honest with them, because that's how we grow. That's how we grow, and that's how our friends can encourage us, and that's how they can sacrifice for us, is when they know who we are. You know, the invitation here is to be fully known, to have at least one other person who fully knows you. I have a friend like that, and one of the ways we kind of moved to this level of risking honesty happened a couple years ago when I was just going through a really tough time. And this friend said to me, hey man, you're kind of day-to-day right now. This is such a challenging time in your life. You're day-to-day, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to call you every day. For the next week, I'm gonna call you every day. And every day, I just want you to be honest with me. How are you feeling? How are you feeling physically? How are you feeling emotionally? How are you feeling with God right now? How's it going with your family? How's it going? And I just wanna get to that level of honesty with you so I can pray with you and encourage you around those things. And we wound up doing that, and it was a mutual thing. We would go back and forth on that. And now, several years later, we still do that. We may not do it every day, but we do it probably 4 or 5 times a week. We're calling and we're just saying, hey man, here's where I'm at. Here's exactly where I'm at right now. And we just pray and encourage each other. And man, there's an incredible strength that comes from being fully known in a friendship like that. That's a great friendship for me. And it's a friendship that grows me because we've been willing to risk that level of honesty. And this is what everyday friends do. They risk that. It's a moment. It's a defining moment when you get that honest with a friend. But man, it can be a powerful moment in a friendship. And we see this in the life of Jesus. Now, you know, some of the things that we risk in a friendship are tough, tough things. You know, one that I see is super, super tough, I honestly believe the Surgeon General should have a warning. If there was a warning on friendship, there should be a Surgeon General warning on this one. Because one of the other things I see Jesus doing is he risks conflict in a friendship. He risks conflict in a friendship. I don't know what your experience has been, but mine is this is the number one killer of friendships. I know more people, including myself, who have had friendships that could have gone to a great place and didn't because there was either not a willingness to get into conflict and resolve it well, or there was just no good resolution of it. And this is just a powerful, powerful moment in a friendship where it can make or break the relationship. But man, if we can harness conflict and deal with it well, it really can take our friendship to a new place. One of the times that this happened with Jesus is an interaction he was having with Peter, one of the inner circle, Peter directly, where he had engaged the disciples in a question. And the question was, well, who do men say that I am? And so the disciples start saying what they've heard other people say. Well, some people think you're a great teacher. Some people think you're just a good teacher that's on the scene right now. And others would even go so far as to say you're a prophet. Maybe maybe God sent you with a message and we need to hear that message. And Peter kind of stands up in the circle of 12 and he says, Jesus, I believe you're God's son. I believe that you are actually the Messiah, the long-awaited king that was going to rescue Israel. I believe that's who you are. I believe you're God in the flesh. And there's this moment where Peter says that, and Jesus just looks at Peter and starts to affirm him. And he says, Peter, I want you to know what you said was not given to you by flesh and blood, but God is at work in your life, Peter. Not only that, God is at work in your life to such a degree that on the foundation, on the rock of what you just said, that I am the Messiah, I'm going to build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. I mean, it's an awesome moment. You can imagine Peter in that moment like, I'm feeling pretty good, man. Come on, Jesus, keep bringing it, right? I mean, it's a good moment in a friendship, right? Man, I'm getting affirmed by my friend. And so Peter, fresh off of that affirmation, same conversation, Jesus says, next, well, let me tell you what's going to happen because of that, because of who I am. The authorities are not going to want to hear that. And at some point, they're going to arrest me, and they are going to try me, and they are going to crucify me, and I'm going to die this horrible death, but it has to happen in order for the prophecies to be fulfilled. And Peter looks at Jesus and he's, Jesus, wait, that's not going to happen. I'm the rock, right? You call me the rock. Look, I'm your boy and I'm telling you, I got your back. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And you would expect that in a moment like this, Jesus would again look at Peter and say, man, you are a great friend. I am really grateful that I have that kind of friend. Well, he does look at Peter, but he actually says something a little different to him. This is what he says. Get behind me, Satan. Whoa, ho. Hold up. Hold up. I don't know about you, but if my friend said that to me, we might have a little conflict. We might have a little conversation that needs to happen. So here's a conflict moment in a friendship. How do you respond in this moment? You know, I like to say that this is one of those moments where a friendship runs up against the Mike Tyson principle of life. Mike Tyson principle of life. So one of the wisest things Mike Tyson ever said was right after he lost the fight to Buster Douglas, right? Everybody remember that. I mean, nobody saw that coming, right? Mike Tyson didn't see that coming. So he's being interviewed afterwards, and the ringside announcer is interacting with Mike, and they're like, Mike Tyson, you just lost to Buster Douglas. We didn't even know who Buster Douglas was, but you lost to this guy. You're the champ. Mike, didn't you have a plan coming in? Didn't you have a strategy for this fight? And Mike Tyson, even though he's shell-shocked, has a moment of clarity, and he looks at the announcer and says, well, man, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. I love that. I love that. I never get tired of saying that either. I never do. I mean, it's but what I would say, conflict is when the Mike Tyson principle hinders your friendship. Let me just tell you, if you're going to have a great friendship, there will come a time when you get punched in the mouth. Conflict is coming. It's going to happen. And here's the thing. If we resolve it well, then it only strengthens the friendship. But if it's resolved poorly, it destroys it. It destroys it. And I think that's why the Bible is so explicitly clear about how we're to resolve conflict in our relationships. Matthew 18, foundational verse on this says, if your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. So what this is saying is, hey, when your friends offend you, when they say things that are out of bounds, when they say things that are hurtful, when they do things that may feel like control to you or just don't seem to be loving to you, you're to go to them and say that. You're to go to them and say, hey, man, when you said that to me, that was hurtful. And I don't know if you meant it that way, but we need to talk about that. Hey, when you did that thing, man, that was overstepping a boundary. I know you were trying to be helpful, but that didn't feel like help in the moment. But what I see happen so many times, I've been guilty of it myself, is instead of going directly to the friend, we engage in what I like to call the Bermuda Triangle of friendship. Because we get involved, we get another person involved. Hey, let me tell you what my friend did to me. How would you handle that? What do you think? And when we start to do that, instead of going directly to our friend, man, it just starts to erode trust and relationship and the opportunity to go to a new place in the friendship. So, I mean, I'll just say, I like Matthew 18. I'm glad that's in the Bible because it works. It's practical. But I tell you the other reason I like it, because in my friendships, I'm usually the one who says the dumb thing. I'm usually the one who, I have a disease, it's called foot and mouth disease. I suffer with that. And so I like Matthew 18, though, because what that says is if I'm offending a friend, unless they come to me and tell me that I've offended them, I'm good. I'm off the hook. So I like that. That's great. What is that, Matthew? Let me write that down. Let me highlight that in my Bible. I like that one. You know, and it would be great. If that was the only thing the Bible said, then yeah, that would be true, that if you're offending a friend, it's up to them to let you know. But interestingly, that's not the only place where Jesus talks about conflict. In Matthew 5, this is what he says. Therefore, for those of you like me who have foot and mouth disease, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. What Jesus is saying is, and we know it, sometimes you know you overstepped the boundary. You know you said a hurtful word to a friend. And what this says is, it is not okay for you to just kind of sit back on that and say, well, if my friend comes to me, then we'll deal with it, but otherwise, I'm just going to try to let it lie. That's not okay. What this is saying is the most spiritual thing you can do, the most mature thing you can do, the strongest thing you can do for your friendship is actually go to your friend and say, hey, when I said that to you yesterday, did that come across hurtful? Because if so, I need to say I'm sorry, and I want us to work through that. Hey, when I did that thing, I was trying to be helpful. I really was, but if that didn't look like help to you, you need to let me know that because I don't want that to be something that's a rift between us. I mean, regardless of where we are, the Bible's real clear. Conflict is something that's going to come to a friendship, and if you handle it well, it can really strengthen a friendship. And the question is, will you risk it? Will you risk going to your friend and saying, you've hurt me? Or will you risk going to your friend and say, have I offended you? Because if you do, there's incredible fruit on the other side of that. You ever had anybody do that with you? You ever had anybody come to you that way? Man, I have. And actually, one of the people who did it was that good friend of mine who we had the daily calls. And it was a moment that really was a defining moment in our friendship. And so I invited him to come up and hang out with me this weekend so we could kind of share that with you guys. So would you guys help me invite up my good friend, Michael Schmidt? Schmitty, as I call him.
Just want to say thanks for not biting my ear, Mr. Tyson.
I do like messing with Mike Tyson from a distance.
It's impressive, man. Gotta blank that out more often.
Yeah. So let me just tell you guys how me and Michael met. Actually, we met, interestingly, talking about this, we met in a group like the home teams that many of you are going to join next week. It was the first journey called The Life, and we got into what we call life groups for that journey. And in many ways, you even showing up for that group was taking a risk. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't too long after I came to Cincinnati. And I think we'd met through another friend, and so you invited me to this. And I just wanted to know more about God, and I figured you looked normal enough at the time that I would go do it. And so I showed up to this house. I didn't think I knew anybody else there. Yeah. And I was just a rolling ball of questions at that point. So mm-hmm. I just spouted them. And every week we discussed them. And at the end of it, you know, I kind of had my questions answered. Mm-hmm. And more than that, I kind of had a sense of who God was. Yeah. And came to Christ.
Yeah, which was just an awesome thing. And, you know, just watching you grow from that moment has been powerful. And community for us has been a big part of that.
Absolutely.
Our friendship and also other groups we've been in. And, you know, a couple years ago, we had a very interesting experience in a group where we risked some conflict. You actually risked some conflict. So let me just lay out the situation for you. It was a couple journeys later, and Maria and I say, hey, you know, we want to host a group. And we want to host it at our home. I think we actually had just bought our house. It was like our first time to do that because our apartment was really small. So we were like, we're going to host a group. We're going to do it big time. And we want to do a couples group. And so we invited Michael and Larissa to be a part of that. And we got some other couples. And, you know, probably 2 weeks into it, we had what I like to call a beautiful marriage moment, which usually means something went horribly wrong. So Maria and I are in the group, and we're kind of, you know, modeling and talking and dialoguing. And, you know, of course, then she and I break out into an argument in front of the group, which is just great for a married couple, right? You just love
that. An impressive argument.
Yeah. It was an impressive argument. It was, yeah. So in the midst of this argument, I was powering up, and I was starting to kind of, you know, raise my voice in a way that was shutting Maria down. And this guy actually had the nerve to call me out on it in the middle of the group. And so I'll ask you the same question that I was thinking at the moment. What were you thinking when you did that?
And you know, I wasn't really thinking in the moment too much. I think that we'd had some relationship before that, and I had agreed, you know, probably with myself previously, that I'm willing to kind of take that risk. And frankly, you'd encouraged it to some degree before, and so I said, this is, you know, this is how I feel, and stepped into that moment, and luckily, we made it through.
Well, Michael, I actually invited you here this weekend in front of all these people to tell you what I was thinking in that moment.
Great. So,
there was absolutely a part of me that was like, I know he didn't just say that to me. In front of these people, I know he didn't just say that. It was absolutely there. I mean, the desire to defend, the desire to deflect, whatever you want to call that. But there was another part of me, and I want to say this is the part that God was influencing, and I think the part that was being influenced by our growing friendship, where I realized, wait, this is a moment for us. This is a defining moment. And in this moment, if I choose to receive that from you, because you were right, if I choose to receive that correction, then our friendship can go to a whole new level. But if I reject that in that moment, that would put a cap on the level of truth that I could receive from you. And it was very important to me, and still is, that you're a person who can speak truth into my life. And so I know for me, that moment was a defining moment, and it was a risk. Why don't you talk about what you think that's meant to our friendship?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. As we look back, the kinds of things we talk about on a day-to-day basis in our calls, put that to shame. I mean, make that look small. And so there's no way we could be talking about those kinds of things and have that much vulnerability if we weren't able to get through that initial conflict.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I think the reason for me that's worked in our relationship is something that Brian said a couple weeks ago that really connected with me. He said he wants to be with people who care more about him than they do the goal. And you know, your friendship with me, you've proven over and over again, you care more about me than you do the goal. And so I can receive that truth from you because I know that behind that, regardless of even how it's delivered, your heart is in the right place. Your heart is, hey, I see an opportunity for you to grow. And you've constantly been that for me. There have been just a tremendous amount of benefits we've received from being in relationship with each other. One of them is a cool personal thing to me, which is, you know, last year I made this crazy decision that I was going to train and run a half marathon. And I had never, you know, I always said I only ran when people were chasing me. So, you know, I just got into running and felt like that was something I could do. That was a big goal. And I came to you with that, and you were like, dude, you can do it.
Absolutely.
And you actually committed to train with me to do it, even though you had run a full marathon and several half marathons. And I think we have a picture of Flying Pig this year. Me and Michael ran that thing together, finished. And I like to put emphasis on the word finished. We finished the race.
Eventually. Yes, we did.
You like to put emphasis on the speed at which we finished the race. So there was a time we were running, if you're familiar with the course, we're just starting the Eden Park Hill, and we're going up Gilbert, and I see these people coming down the other way, and I said to Michael, I said, well, boy, how early did they start that race? Like, what race are they running? And he told me they're half marathoners running the same race we are. They're just on their way back. So yeah, I'm not the fastest runner in the world, but I wouldn't have been able to finish that at any pace had it not been for you walking with me, training with me, encouraging me along the way. And all of that is really fruit of your willingness to take a risk in our friendship. And the marathon is a small example. Because you've been willing to walk with me and take those risks, You know, it shows up in my marriage. It shows up in my relationship with Maria. It shows up in a variety of things. And I think the thing that strikes me the most is I got the opportunity to baptize Michael as a new follower of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, hopefully, I've built into you spiritually.
Without a doubt.
But man, you have shepherded me. And you've helped me to see more of who Jesus is. So thank you for taking the risk in our friendship.
My pleasure.
And maybe next time we'll run the marathon for speed. We'll see where that goes. We'll see where that goes. You know, I'm really grateful that Michael took that risk. It was a moment, no doubt. It was a defining moment in our friendship, and I'm glad he risked that conflict because it really took our friendship to a new place. And I just want to encourage you. You know, we're talking about things today that are not easy. It's not easy to initiate. It's not easy to be the one that's proactively saying, hey, I want to invest and build into this friendship. You know, it's not easy to get honest, to share our scars, to share things with people that we honestly wish weren't a part of us. And to get honest with that in a friendship, man, that's a risk. That's a risk. And, you know, just this whole idea of risking conflict is difficult. And I just want to, let me assure you, if this sounds like a lot of work, if this sounds like it takes a lot of effort, let me just reassure you, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But the payoff is so worth it. You can't grow. You can't grow. There will be a cap on your growth. Whatever, however you define growth, there'll be a cap on your growth if you're not willing in these defining moments to risk, to get to a depth of friendship where someone fully knows you. And man, if you risk it, I'm telling you, the payoff is huge. It's huge. We see this in Peter and James and John. After Jesus leaves the scene, these guys are leading this incredible movement called the church where thousands and thousands of people are joining, and there's all kinds of teaching that they're doing, and these guys are healing people. They're doing incredible things. And I love kind of a snippet we get of how those same authorities who didn't want this movement to advance, they didn't want Jesus to say the things that he was saying. I love, there's this little window we get into their perspective, their observation of these guys who had just initiated a friendship with Jesus and the power that came out of that friendship. This is in Acts chapter 4. It says, when they, the authorities, saw the courage of Peter and John and realized that they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished. And they took note that these men had been with Jesus. I love that line. We can't explain how these guys have the wisdom they have. They're teaching stuff that we don't even understand. And we went to school. We can't explain the power. These are ordinary fishermen. These are blue-collar guys. And we can't trace it to some school they went to. We can't trace it to anything other than the fact they had a friendship with that Jesus dude. And that friendship put power in them and put capacity in them and put resilience in them that would not have been there had they not dropped their nets and risked initiating that friendship with God. They hadn't engaged in an honest way in that friendship, if they hadn't been willing to risk the conflict that naturally arises in a friendship, but because they did, there's something in them today that wasn't there before. And can I just tell you, this is what God does through friendships. This is what he does through everyday friends. God uses our friends to deposit things in us that we will not get any other way. He uses our friends to strengthen us, to bolster us in areas that we can't get strengthened and bolstered in any other way. Your friends literally determine the quality and the direction of your life. And so I just want to encourage you guys to take a risk, to be intentional around your friendships. Take the risk to spend time and initiate with people who can help you grow. Take the risk to be honest, to share scars with those people. Take the risk to be willing to risk conflict. And don't let conflict be the killer of a great friendship, but actually figure out a way to resolve it well. And hey, you know what? We're all going into a six-week period where we get to practice this, where we can actually take this risk. Next week, we start the Strong Challenge, and all of us in here need to be, if we're not already, in a home team. Need to be in a home team. 6 to 12 people who are going to gather either at a house or some coffee shop or somewhere for the purposes of spiritually encouraging each other for the next 6 weeks. And I'm just encouraging you, take a risk. Whether that's hosting one of these, and for all of us, joining one of these, take a risk. And choose to invest in these friendships. Because I'm telling you, the payoff is great. The payoff is great. And you know what? I found a really good friend through what you're about to go through. One of my closest friends, Michael, came through that friendship. That friendship came through a journey. Maybe that'll happen for you. Maybe it won't. But what I can tell you is you're going to get a chance over these next 6 weeks to build some muscles around this, to build some muscles around how do you risk engaging? How do you risk being honest? How do you risk handling conflict well? I won't make many promises to you around the journey. I think it's going to be incredible. I have a ton of excitement and hope. I will make one promise to you. About 50% of you are going to have this experience. You're going to go into this group, and after the first meeting, you're going to walk away, and you're going to say, you know what, that particular person, I'm not sure I can sit in a room with them for the next 5 weeks. I'm really not sure I can do that. And I can just tell you that's going to happen for 50% of you. The other 50% of you, you might be that person. So I'm just saying, we're all going to be in this place. We're all going to be in this place. But if you're willing to risk, the payoff is huge. And I just want to encourage you guys, take the risk. Take the risk. It's a way that God grows us. And it's something that He wants for all of us.